Welcome to Optimize My Life, the ultimate radio show where we unlock the secrets to living our best lives. Now, before we dive into this exciting journey of self-improvement and empowerment, I want to take a moment to thank our incredible sponsor, The Hope Collection, for making this show possible. Their unwavering commitment to spreading hope and positivity in our lives is truly remarkable. We believe in the power of interaction, so we want you to be a part of this incredible journey. Call in, write to us, or connect on social media. We'd love to hear your questions, experiences, and challenges. Together, we'll create a thriving community of like-minded individuals, supporting each other to thrive and shine.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our show today. It's Nutrition Matters with Beth Wyman. Excuse me. So I know, listen up and call in if you have a chance, and learn something from Beth, because she is a registered dietitian and very, very knowledgeable in all things relating to nutrition and health. So with that, welcome, Beth. Welcome to the show today.
Hi, thank you. I'm currently making another cup of coffee.
No.
Because this... I got caught up into doing like some billing things for private practice this morning and just completely lost track of time. Usually I'm sitting at my desk, I've got my coffee ready and everything ready to go by the time we get to this point in the day. And that just didn't happen today by any stretch.
Well, luckily I put an alarm on my phone for 11:45, because that's as soon as you can log on to Blog Talk Radio, open the show. And, you know, at 11 o'clock, 11:30, I, you know, no problem. All of a sudden, the alarm goes off. It's like, good thing I shut the alarm for every Wednesday so that
usually,
I know what time it is.
Yeah, usually I have like a 10-minute timer, and that's when I call in and like I get myself settled. Well, I call in and I chat with whoever else is on, and it just, you know, today was different because I was like way down deep into like trying to read through like the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, like guidelines and things, and I just was totally lost. So,
happens.
Yeah. So Mary actually sent me something that I thought was interesting and I really wanted to dive into today. And it really brings in more, like, yes, the nutrition component because it's food related, but also very much like the public health component and looking at our food as like a, like our, where we get our food as a system, right? And so it's looking at what she had sent me was this article about pesticides in, or just chemicals, it says, found in Cheerios and Quaker oats and other oat-based foods. And I actually had something I really didn't dive into, but I had somebody else recently tell me, like, they no longer eat oat-based foods because it's going to leach minerals from your body, which is not true. Yeah. I honestly didn't even bother going and looking it up more. I was just like,
I can imagine how that could even work, but okay.
Like, that's not – so, no. Oat-based foods, so – excuse me as I choke. Cheerios are an oat-based food, right? And I think we talked about this last time, too, that Cheerios are an oat-based food. Maybe. And they're great for heart health. And I think that's how it came up last episode. They're really wonderful for your heart health, oats, because the type of fiber that is found in there, it's something called beta-glucans, are wonderful at helping to lower cholesterol. A lot of times when people come to me looking to lower their cholesterol, they're like, do I need to go vegetarian? Do I need to cut out all animal products and go super low fat? And that's just not the case. It's always good to look and see if you can cut out some like really high fat foods or like high animal fat foods to help lower how much cholesterol you're taking in. Because we all make cholesterol as animals. But a lot of times it comes down to moving more, right? Even just like going for a walk and increasing how much fiber you're getting. And then that's like sort of the magic trick for lowering cholesterol. So without, you know, if we're going to suddenly demonize oat products, we're really doing ourselves a disservice because it's just going to be that much harder to hit those fiber goals for the day. It's not easy. The recommendation is 25 to 30 grams of fiber every day. And that's, you know, that's making sure that you're getting in whole grains probably at least twice a day, that you're getting in, I mean, beans once a day would really help, and then fruits and vegetables with every meal, right? That would get you to that goal. But that's definitely not, that's not what we would call like the standard American diet.
No.
at all. Especially for some reason, beans. I feel like we don't see as like a daily thing in a standard American diet, which is really too bad because they're also very cheap.
Yeah, it's funny. I think more of in the summer, eating like baked beans or something like that, but seems to be more of a picnic food.
Oh, really? Yeah, this, we do, like in our house, we have a roasted chickpeas as a snack a lot. And then we also do, like I'll do black beans. I'll just like saute them. And then recently I just kind of kept them in the fridge and added them to stuff. Or like beans and rice where you're just combining the two together is pretty, is normal in other cultures, but not necessarily like that standard American diet.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a missed opportunity for adding in fiber. I put them in scrambled eggs. I put black beans in scrambled eggs last week.
Hmm.
It was good. I mean, it's not, you know, they're not necessarily like a strong flavor, and the texture went well. So, yeah. All right, so let's see.
Beth, I can jump in right there.
Oh, hi. Yeah, sure.
This country boy, again, you're right. It's not an American culture kind of thing, but in different parts of the country you'll see it. I just happened to be country and grew up watching Gunsmoke and all the cowboy movies, and it was traditional for us to have beans just about 3 to 4 times a week. Excuse my French.
Excellent.
We had a little saying that says soup beans. Soup beans is what we call them because there was a nice roux down in there that had a lot of juice in it. And, of course, we had cornbread or some type of biscuits every day or some type of bread every day. But it was soup beans, good for your heart. The more you eat them, the more your heart, the more you feel. So eat soup beans whenever your meal. The other night, sometimes I'm on the run. I love to cook, but I fell in love with 90-second rice. They got long grain and brown rice. Well, every time I cook rice, brown rice, it takes me 20 to 30 minutes. And I, between there and finishing it, it's going to either stick to the pot, I'll burn it because I'm doing something else, forgot it was cooking. But the brown rice, long grain brown rice, I mix quite often with baked beans. When the holidays blew in and we had the honey baked ham, I might chisel some of the honey baked ham up in the beans to give them just a little bit more flavor. And even during the holidays around Thanksgiving and New Year's, as the Afro-American culture, we always had what we call black-eyed peas. There's just so many different types of nutritional beans. And matter of fact, last year I had five different kinds. They call them field peas. Some people call them Crowder peas. We grew those. Green beans, we probably eat year-round as a side choice of a vegetable if you don't know what to eat. And a lot of people around here don't eat a whole lot of broccoli. Green beans is always an alternative for having something green every night or three or four times a week. That green bean falls into position. And then we have what we call bean soup. So if you have the leftover beans, black beans left in the refrigerator, and two or three days ago you might have cooked some beans and put them in a little Ziploc and froze them, then you've never had something so wonderful as have a type of bean soup. And again, it might be so served over rice or not. But I love the bean conversation because, again, I'm a country boy / cowboy, and we eat beans traditionally 3 to 5 times a week.
That's wonderful. It's so good for so many different things, right, besides, like, the increased fiber, the effects. Well, yeah, any of the fiber is going to help cholesterol. It's wonderful. You know, everybody talks about pre- and probiotics, and really a prebiotic is just fiber. So you don't have to take a supplement. You can just eat high-fiber foods like beans and get the same benefit.
When you say benefits, what? That's without running for the border. Again, that fiber does make you consistent. But if you just think about it, if you're eating three meals a day, then you probably should go 2 to 3 times a day. And a lot of people don't do that. So I'm glad you're talking about fiber today, because I'm supposed to be taking a friend of mine who's on meds now, and he don't eat his normal diet. And I said, well, how you doing today? He says, actually, I'm kind of constipated. I got to bring you a bowl of beans.
Yeah. There is an international code. So the thing Mary sent me, right, about the pesticides, or really the title of the article really just says chemicals, but once you get into it and read it, it's looking at the pesticides used in the production of the oats, right? So way back to, like, the farming aspect versus the actual product that you're eating. And that's something that maybe that people don't always think about, is where the food is coming from. And it's something that works well for, like, scare tactic documentaries to look at industrialized farming. But at the end of the day, it is definitely an area of privilege to be able to grow your own food or buy it locally versus going and getting what's cheapest at the store, right? So from that public health perspective of looking at how do you feed everybody in an effective manner, there's always going to be some variety of industrialized farming. Otherwise, there just isn't enough food for the entire planet. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of the way it is. It's not bad. It just is. And then where some of these other things come in, right, of looking at, like, well, what about the chemicals that we're using on them? There's a lot of unknown, right? It's not necessarily that you don't always know, like, oh, yes, this can absolutely cause problems, in which case then it's taken off. Think about, like, DDT, right? Like, that was a chemical pesticide that used to be used that they found had huge impacts on health, so it was pulled and is no longer used. Super effective as a pesticide, but horrible for people. So there are testing standards, and I mean, you could get into some serious, like, conspiracy theories on the political aspects of the testing standards, but there are testing standards that these pesticides have to go through by country. So, like, what we're allowed to use might be different than what, like, Europe is allowed to use. And so it's an imported product might not be held to the same standards as something that's, like, grown here. Mm-hmm. Or vice versa. Sometimes, especially, like, Europe will have stricter standards than we do. on certain things. So it's kind of interesting. There's no broad global set standard for like pesticide use and industrial farming practices. The World Health Organization does put out They're good. I don't think you necessarily have to abide by it, but it's sort of their recommendations, if you will. And so many countries will go with that and try to make sure that they adhere to that. But again, they don't have to. And at the end of the day, it's a business. They're trying to make sure that they can produce the most out of each crop with the least amount of loss, right? That's the entire point of the pesticides, is to reduce crop loss to produce enough food. So it's like, where's the line, right? And I don't necessarily have an answer. Like, where's the line between making sure that enough is produced and watching what's put on it and what could potentially be leaching into your food? It's just not even guaranteed. And I'm looking
question,
for...
Question, Beth.
Oh, sure.
And again, you said we don't really have a way of tracking and analyzing. And I had a conversation last night with a couple friends of mine. We was talking about the price of organic foods. We want to eat better. We want to be healthier. But who can afford organic food? And just to get tickled, my neighbor has a chicken farm. He produces about 30,000 eggs a month. And then maybe 2 years ago, once a week, he brings eggs by my house, 10 flats. That's 2.5 dozen per flat, y'all.
That's a lot of eggs.
What am I going to do with all these eggs? So now they call me the egg man in the community. But I said that to say he educated me, because we would start to talk about organic growing and how the local farmers here in the area use his waste from his chicken houses to fertilize the fields. And if you see the fields now, they're already green. Now, I said all that to say he introduced me to – are y'all familiar with double yolk eggs?
Sure.
Oh, I've seen those where there's two yolks in it.
Okay, yeah, but still, he gives them to us. They're healthy. They got more nutrition in them, but – did y'all hear that but? That means it cancels everything I just said. But he says the chickens produce double yolk eggs because they're in stress mode. They haven't got a regular sleeping schedule. They haven't got a regular eating schedule. And until they do that, it takes about 60 to 90 days. They're stressed and they lay double yolk eggs. But once he gets them on a sleeping, eating, drinking habit, and they start to produce single yolk eggs, but they produce twice as many eggs. I'm like, get out of here. I was like, yeah, clever. Yeah, you know. I didn't know that. So I think that's my question.
Because you don't see them too often, but every once in a while you'll get a double yolk, and I never knew why.
I never knew either. So my question, Beth, is for us who do and love healthy eating, and you start to go out to the grocery store, if you don't have a huge family and you want to buy something that's got label organic and it costs almost twice as much around here, how do we really know what we're buying is actually better for us just because they put it on the pack and label it, excuse my French, organic?
That's an awesome question. Organic doesn't necessarily mean healthier, right? Organic just means that they've used different pesticides and different fertilizers. So, and it can honestly, like you mentioned how some of the farms use his like chicken waste for fertilizer, right? That brings in just different concerns, right? Yes, it's organic, and so it sounds great. You've got this organic product, but now you've got salmonella risk because you're using chicken waste. So it's like you've just got a different concern than the one you were trying to avoid. It's just different. So you're not necessarily eating something that's better for you or going to help you live longer, help you get a better nutrient profile. Definitely not going to help you get a better nutrient profile just because it's organic. It would be if for whatever reason you're genuinely concerned about, like, this chemical exposure piece of it. But then, like I said, it just means it's different ones. It's just organic versus non-organic compounds. It's not that there's no pesticides involved. It's just different ones or different fertilizers. So really, it's a lot of marketing.
Yeah.
Really, to get, like, more nutrient-dense food, locally grown, and I know we've covered this, like, locally grown where it's picked when it's ripe is going to be best, or frozen when you're looking at produce, because then it's picked and flash frozen when it's ripe. And so you're getting more, it's had more time to absorb nutrients from the soil. Or if you've got the money for it, there's a whole movement of, like, regenerative agriculture where they're looking at putting more nutrients back in the soil. And when I used to run a gardening program, this is one of the things that we taught to the kids in the program was, like, cover cropping. And so making sure that in either, like, your off season or rotating out different patches during different growing seasons and planting a cover crop, a lot of times we would use, like, soybeans to literally not even be harvested, just to plant, replenish minerals in the soil, and even just till back into the soil sometimes to maintain the nutrient components in the soil that the food's grown in.
Thank you for saying that.
That doesn't go on the package.
Yeah, thank you for saying that too, Beth, because with me being a country boy again, organic to me means exactly what you just said, except we call it crop rotation. In the same soil, we grew beans, we grew corn, we grew squash, we grew soybeans or collard greens or turnip greens. They grow turnip greens here locally to give away. And it has more, 10 times more nutrition than spinach. And then the turnips that are grown completely in the soil, this same guy that's growing turnips to give away, he introduced me to, now they're growing, I don't know if you guys know that the sweet potato was an albino potato before it turned orange, before we changed it with the ingredients in the soil. So to me, crop rotation, and we have, my garden has organic stuff in it, because the only thing I put on that garden is pure lime, which you can eat and put on your tongue and it won't hurt you, and ashes that come from my fireplace and my friend's wood heater. They pile them up for me, and I go by. Now, if that's not organic with the complements of soil rotation, and then we keep water, everybody here in the valley, what we call a valley, has real rivers and creeks. So the people that tell me that they're growing organic vegetables, my first question to them, Beth, is, where do you get your water from? Oh, your own city water with chemicals in it. Oh, okay. I'll stop right there, Beth.
It's, yeah, and it's interesting because even if you're doing what's probably organic farming techniques, you're still not certified. Right. So there is, and that's where I was saying you can go down a little bit of, like, a political rabbit hole with this too, of, like, you can be following organic practices, but you cannot say your food is organic unless the government comes in and certifies your practices as organic, which I find fascinating that they've found a way to make money on it.
I was just going to say it's a boondoggle.
But we also said buy local. So most of the people that sell their produce around here, with the exception of the guy that produces 30,000 eggs, of course, that's a commercial base. But the local grown farmers around here on such a family kind of barter system. Linda grows corn. I grow green beans. We both got some of each. You come in with peas and green beans, And then we got a better mixture. Somebody else brings the eggs. That's what I'm really loving about going back home, because everything, and I've always operated with an attitude of gratitude, appreciating all those things. One little quick joke that has just put some dessert right in the middle of the show real quickly, Beth. You remember that little saying, you can't have your cake and eat it too? Y'all have heard that before, right?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
That's not true at all. I was raised in a house with 17 people, and when my grandmama used to bake cakes, I was the one that bullied. She used to show me her recipes, so I know how to bake her cake. But when we bake cakes, we bake the minimum of about 8 to 10 pound cakes. But Beth, guess what we did with the first cake that we baked?
I don't know.
We took it to Linda's house. That was my grandmother's best friend. And as soon as I walked in with a pound cake for Linda, Linda said, oh, country, hang on. I got something for your grandmama. She had a sweet potato pie.
Oh, nice.
So we go back and forth, fast forward the tape. We gave the first cake away. The second cake we had for dessert that night. The third and fourth cake my grandmama gave to another neighbor. The fifth and sixth cake, we put it in the freezer. So now, who told you that you can't have your cake and eat it too? We had cake that we gave away a second time, ate some a third time, and when we wanted more, we just go and freeze one. So you can have your cake and eat it too.
Okay. So back with like the pesticides, and what I found interesting is it even in the original article, or did I dig a little bit farther? I think I dug farther than the original article. The study that the article was based on looked at, I think it was 96 people. Yeah. And was looking at the levels of these pesticides in the people, right, to determine exposure. Specifically on 96 people, which is, it's not a lot, especially if you're looking at an entire country like the United States. Typically, when you're looking for something that you're going to expand to, say there's something wrong with an entire population, you need like hundreds of people, like multiple hundreds, if not in the thousands of people, to be able to say like, hey, there might be an issue. I just, you know, 96 isn't that much. So there is that. It's like, okay, is it just those people for some reason? Where were they from?
What else did they eat?
And there's also, yeah, what else did they eat? How do we know that it's specifically this? So it raises a lot of additional questions, right? And I tend to always come in with this sort of like critical lens, which is just a product of what I do. But and there's potential impacts on health. There is potential impact on health from pesticide exposure, but it's how much, how often, right, in addition to what it is. So there's a tolerable level that's maintained by the EPA, by the Environmental Protection Agency, of what's allowed to be used in a certain amount of time so that the amount that's in the food stays regulated. And I mean, from a personal perspective, like growing up, my grandmother's family, they were tobacco farmers down south. And my grandma talks about playing outside while the pesticide planes were flying over, right? Like they just played in it. And it absolutely had health impacts. She and all of her siblings have had a variety of cancers, and it's now when I like am asked about my family medical history at the doctor's office, and I tell them, and I'm like, but it needs this caveat, like they were right. So heavily exposed to directly to these chemicals. It's not that they were eating the food that the chemicals were used on; it's that they were literally in it as it was being spread. Like, that's different, and that's not what most of us are exposed to. So it's one of those things where, like, it gets put in my medical history as family history, but then it kind of has this little star next to it. Because it's like, yeah, it's there, and some of them, she's gotten tested, and a lot of them are not, like, genetic-based now that there's so many additional testings that can come out. And so it's really been ruled that a lot of it was that environmental exposure for her. And so, yes, like, high levels of exposure absolutely can cause problems, but that's not the level of exposure that we're getting when you're eating food in a reasonable amount. And it is regulated. And there's, what did it come out as? A few years ago, there was that whole thing with, like, arsenic in rice. And I feel like this is just going to be the next one. And it's just, you're not going to get enough of it to cause a problem.
In your regular diet. Yeah, I see.
Beth,
yeah,
I got
in a regular diet.
I got a curveball, Beth.
Oh, sure.
I'm not trying to be devil's advocate over here, but for 10 years I was in the food business. Like, I'm a brand ambassador. So I branded well over 100 different products over the last 10 years for grocery stores, and they used to pay me $35 to $55 an hour to get people to taste stuff. Excuse me, ma'am. Excuse me, sir. Would you like to give your taste buds a joyride? So I would invite you over to give you a free sample, because if you don't try it for free, we're not going to stick it on the shelf and you're not going to try it later. So please come over and try it. But during the winter months, they changed me back from letting people taste food to asking people questions, dangerous questions. Like, do you wash your food really good when you get it home? And most of the people would say, yes. Some people like me that didn't want to wait till they got home picked that apple up that 300 people had touched that day and shined it up on my shirt sleeve. I started asking people serious questions again. Do you wash your food? But question number two, Linda, do you know why the cucumbers and the squash and the apples and the green beans shine? Because of you, they lightly mist them with wax. Fact, your body will fight off its own bacteria and enzymes, but not everybody else's. So what about the people that touched the food that you took home and ate it, processed it, without cleaning it? And then the people that did tell me that they washed their fruits and veggies off real good, I asked them, do you know what's on there? They said, yes. Wax, do you wash your food when you get it home, country boy? Yes. What do you wash it with? Water. Have you ever tried to wash wax off with water?
You didn't even add a little something.
So lemon juice, again, is those bacteria, not just what's in the soil. Beth, you pointed it out. Where do you buy your food from the local grocery store on side of the road towards not being monitored? Or are you buying your food from a monitored environment that's been touched by the whole public?
Which, I mean, you can counteract by washing it, right? That's that whole, like, you know, how much fear do we really need to put around eating our food? It's a very simple wash things off, right? Whether or not you're worried about the wax component or the fact that how many people have touched it before you did, or, you know, realistically, like, if it's sitting in a warehouse, there's probably, like, rodents that run across it. You know, just wash it off first. Same thing with, like, wiping down, and this is something people usually forget in terms of, like, a food safety perspective, wiping the outside of cans before you open them, because everything inside the can is theoretically clean.
Yeah.
Or, like, if you're slicing a melon, to wipe down the outside of the melon first. Otherwise, you're just dragging whatever's on the outside of the melon through the inside of it as you slice it.
And then my point being, with lemon juice versus water, most of the time when you just wet stuff, or like you said, Beth, wipe things off, you're only moving bacteria from one part of the surface to another part of the surface. Some people say, oh, yeah, I would do mine with vinegar. Vinegar kills about 36 different types of bacteria, but if you Google it, lemon juice kills about 6,000 kinds of bacteria. So every day you will see in my little cute bottle in the on the kitchen sink right next to the dish detergent to where I can spray everything, especially the strawberries and the cherries, and broccoli has wonderful little hiding crevices if you think you just stuck your broccoli underneath there. And, of course, the temperature of the food when you cook it. But lemon juice should be something that every household in America has in the bathroom in case we can't guide it good and hit the toilet seat. Or if you just want to be one of those people that want to shower and go in a hurry and don't get a chance to dry the bathtub up or the bottom of the shower curtain, if you'll mist it with lemon juice, then again, that can keep those bacteria areas cooked nice and clean and fresh for you and your family, not just during the wintertime, but year-round.
Yeah, yeah. Anything that's got that acidity to it can help to kill things off, which is great. And there are you can buy special vegetable and fruit washes and stuff, or just mix up your own. Yeah, to get the stuff that's on the surface, right? And then it's really there's not enough that gets absorbed into the food to truly be an issue for humans. It's regulated. And then what I thought was interesting that I actually didn't know is that the EPA actually goes back and rechecks, how long was it? Was it 10 years or 15? I think it's every 10 years that it goes back and just rechecks stuff that was certified as safe before to make sure that it's still safe, basically. Which I thought was really cool. They don't just set it and leave it. It gets revisited at a specific interval. I really thought I read 15 before, but this is saying 10. And this is the Food Quality Protection Act of 1996.
I was watching the food, I don't know which station it was, but they have Food That Built America. They have, Toys That Built America and all this. But in Food That Built America is from the turn of the 19th century, say, how much safer our food is and processing is so much better than how it was years ago. And that, that there is, yes, there's things that can be overlooked, but on the whole, our food is very, very safe. On the whole, of course, there's, and that's why they have recalls, because it's tested, that they know that something's wrong. So if there is something is wrong, there can be, action taken. But it's interesting. The show, as I remember it, showing how things, meat alone is handled so much better than it was, 50, 100 years, 100 or 50 years ago, so
oh,
there
absolutely.
Are safety checks. I was reading, your fancy French cuisine with the fancy sauces. Well, the sauces were made because the meat was so bad, they needed to cover up the taste and smell. When you think about the history of food.
What was it called? The Food That Made Us?
The Food That Built America. There's a whole series, the Toys That Built America, I don't know if it's on the History Channel or what it's on, but they're quite interesting.
Yeah, so I want to get back into it. I think I've only done one, actually. Or two? Two. Like doing YouTube reaction videos to different food documentaries. Because I feel like whenever a new one comes out, I always get asked my opinion on it. And so it's kind of just fun for me to go watch them and then do just like a quick little, 10, 15 minute reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So The Food That Built America, possibly on the History Channel.
Let's give you a test real fast, Beth. Are you ready? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Sure. I love it.
everybody's loving beets now. For some reason, the thing that we hated when we was younger, when we grew older, we found out were good for us. I know, mm-hmm. just not just here in the family, but friends and family and people I haven't even talked to, we get into these kind of conversations, and beets is one that's came up a lot. Do you want to speak for a second just to give us a sample on what you know about beets, Beth? Would you be surprised?
So, beets, I don't like them. I'll eat beet green, but I will not eat beets. Because
I love
think they taste
beets.
Like dirt.
Oh,
I know, so many people love them and think that they're like so sweet. And I might actually be the only person I know that genuinely thinks that they taste like dirt. I don't, clearly something's wrong with me. That's a me issue. That's not a beet issue. But beets just naturally are a precursor to, I think it's nitric oxide, but it helps with blood flow. So it's a natural way to help improve blood flow in your body, and specifically like people that work out sometimes either take like a beetroot powder or supplement before they go work out, or could theoretically just drink beet juice, which is what I used to do, and use that as like a pre-workout to increase blood flow to their muscles, because it's going to relax the blood vessels a little bit and allow for more blood flow. So that's, beets are fascinating.
So Beth, when we're talking about things that we don't like, and again, something like that, you would hold your nose and drink it down because your mom made you. But again, powder can be camouflaged in so many ways in the smoothies with the things that you like. When I first started liking beets is when my mom made a smoothie and she accidentally put two hunks of pineapple in my beet, in my shake, in my smoothie. And all of a sudden it was just some ugly red juice that I had to hold my nose and chug it down with that pineapple taste that was added to it. And then my friends that I converted to, they just added a half a teaspoon full of honey like they normally would put in their tea or coffee. Instead of having caffeine in the afternoon, they had beet juice with a spoonful of honey. I'll stop right there, Beth.
I choked it down. I put it in coffee and used that as my pre-workout. Instead of doing like a pre-workout powder, and I would just choke it down. I was that person. I wasn't going to try to sweeten it. I just held my nose and went for it. And it worked great. I don't know why I stopped. I think I just wasn't using it fast enough and it was starting to just go bad, and it's not cheap to buy it. I have had them roasted. Like I've done like a roasted beets and sweet potatoes. And I'll eat them that way. And that's, so roasting brings out like this wonderful, roasting and grilling, I find, bring out like a wonderful flavor to vegetables. But then that also gets into people wonder if it's adding in, or not adding in chemicals, but that charred aspect of the food that you get. If you get blackened spots on it, I know that every few years it comes back up like, oh, well, this is like a cancer causing to have this charred part of on your food. And that, again, goes back to, like, how much of it are you having, right? Like, if mm-hmm. you're just eating the black charred stuff for your whole meal, then, yeah, it's not good. But the amount that you are eating on, like, a burger or, like, grilled vegetables or something, it's not enough to cause a problem. Like, you have a body that's made to filter those things. And like we talked about last time, like detox anything that's coming in. Like you're made to interact with your environment.
Right.
Beth,
Go ahead.
I heard a little taste of my mama's wisdom come out right there at the end of that statement, Beth. She lived to be 103, and she was not one of those people that say, I don't eat red meat or I don't eat pork. She said moderation. You said it more than one time, Beth, in three or four different ways, that if we're eating a balanced, keyword, balanced diet, even those things that you don't like, beach, can you actually ingest it and get it into your body to where you know you're not doing your body harm, but you're doing it good in moderation?
Yeah.
It
sounds like your family's got the longevity mind does.
George Carlin, the comedian, put it best, that what causes cancer is saliva, but only if taken in small amounts over a long period of time. Because according to the news, everything.
I believe it, because if you read in the Word, Linda, it says that death is on the power of the tongue.
Well, there you go.
So nowadays, modern day times, if you'd only knew then what you know now, don't just brush your teeth, brush your tongue.
It's not saying, like, go out and do whatever. Like, you could certainly be conscientious of your choices, but, like,
yeah.
I don't know. Something's going to kill you.
Yeah.
Like, at least enjoy
no
it.
No getting out alive.
Let me give you a better way to say that, Beth. You can't get out of life alive.
No, you can't. That's the guarantee. And it's just, and then you have to wonder, and this I don't think you could ever do a study on because there's far too many factors involved, but the stress of worrying about the different things that could or could not be leached into your food, that stress
yeah.
can also have a negative health impact. So at what point are you making it worse on yourself, like this proverbial person, right? How much are they just making it worse on themselves by worrying and causing
exactly.
more damage than this other thing potentially ever could? Because stress will absolutely kill you.
I've had cancer twice, and my a friend of my friend had also had cancer. But she made her life so miserable, and she couldn't eat this, she couldn't do that. Her diet was so restricted to horrible sounding, weird things. She would go on
yeah.
these weird, and she just made herself miserable. It's like, and then, you know, she did end up passing away, but she just made her. She was the most unhappy and unhealthy, and I think some of the problems was the weird diets that she put herself on. And I can't say the doctors
yeah.
or anyone put her on. She put herself on. And it's like, no, I mean, I do obviously watch what I eat and exercise. I started up a new walk, you know, I like the on the internet, on YouTube, I can find these exercise programs. I just started a new one, and they're just a lot of fun. And this one's for seniors because I am officially. But, you know, it's just, so I do take care, but I'm not going to go so overboard that you can't even enjoy living.
Right.
Linda, if I may, let me give everybody a pre-breakfast before you have breakfast. An organic
okay.
conversation with yourself in the mirror. What are you saying to you about you? Because regardless on whether it's good or regardless on whether it's bad, it's the truth if you say it to yourself. If you can break that diet, break that exercise habit, break whatever you're doing, start anew, and it all starts with self-conversation, that conversation that you're feeding yourself through your tongue, through your saliva glands, is one of the most important organic meals that you could have for the day.
Yeah.
I'm writing something down that we'll do next week. That just made me think of it, is that the way that specifically like parents or anybody that's directly involved with children, the way that they word things, whatever they're saying about like food and exercise and health, directly impacts the children too, whether or not they realize it. And that becomes very interesting. I'm writing that down for next week. Where's my podcast? I have color-coded sections of my notebook, so that's going in podcast ideas.
I know, my mom never forced us to eat anything we didn't like because she hated that when she was a kid. You can try everything. You know, you think you don't like it, at least try it. But she never forced us. You have to eat this. You know, if you really, like, for instance, I do not like yogurt. I wish I did because everyone says it's so healthy and makes a nice meal and all this stuff. I just don't like it. It's like you and beets. It just triggers something in my mouth that I just can't eat it.
Yeah.
But I have tried it. You know, like Ron and I tried every single one on the market trying to find something that we like. But, you know, there's some things that you're just not going to eat.
Yeah, and that's okay, right?
Question, Beth.
What?
Sure.
Are you one of those people? Now, don't let me put words in your mouth. It's not what you say. It's how you say it. Does that have any ground for you when people say that? It's not what you say, but it's how you say it. Does the interpretation on what you're saying to people about what it is that you want them to try or digest or ingest or sample, does it matter how you say it?
I mean, sometimes there's like a little bit of when you're looking to get somebody to try something new, you know, how you're saying something certainly matters.
Well, not necessarily new. Something that I grew up and I swore up and down and until the Three Bears came along, I hated porridge. They call it oatmeal. But now as an adult, I thought it looked like food that was already been chewed and digested and redigested. You know what I'm saying? But again, the presentation, if you ask most people about food, people want to smell food first. It has to look good first. Two,
yeah.
You smell it second. Third, then you decide to taste it. So the presentation and what you're saying about what it is that you want somebody to try, does that have any validity to it? Could I make squash look good in a casserole and get you to try
it? It does. So it has an impact on whether or not, especially children, will try food on how it looks. Adults too. I mean, but we're generally more open to actually trying something. But yes, the presentation, and there have been studies done with like school nutrition and what you serve the food on, and it can be the exact same food, but if you serve it on like a cardboard tray versus on a plate, like children are more likely to eat it when it's served on the plate. Food acceptance based on like visual perception is absolutely a thing.
My mother was a home ec teacher, and so growing up, our pancakes were always shaped like animals. We'd have salads with funny faces on them with different vegetables
great.
And different. I mean, our food very, very, very creative. And so I was laughing because Ron's birthday was Monday, and I made I did some chicken, and I had these little twice-baked potatoes and cream-style corn, and I was laughing. My mother would not. Everything was the same color. And that would be a no-no with my mother. You know, you had to have different colors. You can't have everything, you know, the same color.
Yeah, it's presentation. Presentation.
Yeah.
And that's actually...
But sometimes they can fool you with presentation. I had caviar my first time. Served to me on silver platters, and to toast it with was Dom Perignon and crystal glass. Those are the two of the most horrible things I've ever had in my whole life. Listen, what's the matter, country? I'm trying to figure out somewhere to spit it out at.
Yeah. How do you delicately just get rid of it?
Yeah.
It's yeah, that presentation piece, and it's actually one of the things that when I do menu reviews, that like we're trained to look for is how does it appear on the plate? Like, do you have a variety of colors, a variety of textures, a variety of like temperatures, right? So is it a hot dish with a cold side salad? Is it something crunchy and something like smooth or whatever it might be, so that the meal is interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Right, like to more than just your taste buds.
With the color of things, it's not just how it looks, but really that you're getting all the nutrition, you know. We would always have a green vegetable and a yellow vegetable or an orange vegetable, you know, because we always have two vegetables. But, you know, so it's not really just to make everything look pretty, but there's science behind it, you know, of why.
Believe it or not, it's just easier to think of it in terms of like, okay, we need a green and an orange, instead of thinking like, okay, which of these things is going to be high in iron and which is going to be high in vitamin C? Where are we going to get our vitamin A from? It's so much easier to just categorize by color, and then it sorts itself out, right? It's like how to translate all the science stuff into what people actually see and deal with, the actual food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because I looked at some, my mom still has some of her textbooks from college, and you know, and healthy eating and different things. You know, it really is neat. And that's back from the 40s. You know, so
I would love to see those one day. I don't know how we would arrange it, but like I would love to see those. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you
come here in May for Memorial Day, we'll get together.
Oh, and you grew up right there, so it's not like it's from far away. That's true.
I'm right here in Buffalo.
Linda, Beth, I need y'all to do me another favor. I'm in the favor season. I found out also reading the word favor has nothing to do with prosperity. It means that God can trust you to do a number of different things because you've been there, done that with him before, so he can trust you with more and more and more. It's been such an interesting conversation about food and health and nutrition today. With the minutes that we have left, Beth and Linda, could you guys, if you was one of those people that kind of came on in the middle or at the last, we talked about so many wonderful things, and I know Beth has already made some notes for y'all for the next show next week, but kind of sum it up, Linda, Beth, could y'all give us some real quick cliff notes? If I had to walk away with one or two, three key things that I've heard today that I can actually take with me and let it marinate in my spirit, what would that be?
Stress over your produce, right? Don't stress over your produce. Just pick up a fruit or a vegetable and eat it. Maybe wash it first. That's probably the best piece of advice you can get. And trust that, you know, things are regulated as best they can be in the moment, and it's as healthy as it can be. And it's better to have some kind of fruit and vegetable than to be scared and not have any.
Awesome.
Exactly.
How about you, Linda? What would be your little gold nugget that we can take with us today, Linda?
Just eat as fresh as you can, and don't forget that frozen is like Beth said, sometimes even better than fresh, because you know, it's picked right away. But just make sure you always have a good vegetable. I know I had cream style corn for Ron because that's one of his favorites. That's not really the best one, but you know, just eat fresh. Try not to, you know, stay away or to not try to stay away from the, you know, super processed, you know, leave the Twinkies, you know, little Debbie is not your friend. Remember that. You know?
I like that.
Well,
in my
I can't
My little nugget would say, again, grandmama's nugget, mama's nugget, country boy nugget says, too much of anything good is not good for you. So moderation and balance is always the key. Drink and be merry, because tomorrow we all may die.
Well, just watch what you're eating and drinking so that you last a little longer. But with that, thanks, Beth. I appreciate all your knowledge. Thanks so much. And we'll continue next Wednesday with more health and nutrition matters.
Awesome.
Bye, everyone.
Have a great day, guys. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.